This man signed the execution orders for 200 people over a period of 8 years. Tens of dozens of women were sentenced under his signature to death by stoning. Workers were killed for going on strike. Students demonstrating for freedom on the 9th of July, 2004 were brutally crushed on his orders. He killed dissidents in famous chain murders. Women constantly harassed, no rights, second-class citizens. Any protest against discriminatory laws were answered by whips, arrests, torture, humiliation, and imprisonment. Homosexuals were arrested and sentenced to long-term imprisonment or execution. Thousands of people were arrested and tortured for defending basic human rights, and hundreds of worker strikes and demonstrations, students who wins protests, nurses and teacher strikes, savagely repressed. Now, who is this party animal? This is the former reformist president of Iran, Mohammad Khatami, during whose reign Zahra Kazemi, Montreal photojournalist, was arrested in Tehran, beaten to death by his personally appointed prosecutor, Saeed Mortazavi, who was then promoted to be Procurator General of Iran, then sent to the UN Human Rights Council meetings this year in Geneva. To the Harper administration's credit, Canada was the only country to ask for his arrest. Her son lives in Montreal, Stefan Hashemi. This man, Mohammad Khatami, is in the United States. He's lecturing the West on what it's doing wrong. He spoke on Friday to a Muslim Congress in Chicago, will be speaking at several universities. On Thursday, will address the Washington National Cathedral, where presidents pray and great ceremonies of state take place. And he will be speaking on a dialogue of civilizations. Noxiously repugnant. How did he get in? Tremendous story. Civil society arose as one from many nations to urge the State Department of the United States not to give this man a visa. I spoke to many of the leaders of the anti-Khatami drive just last Wednesday, and I put them in touch with State Department officials who assured us, quote, no way that this guy is going to get a visa. Friday morning, he was in the United States. What happened was, as it turned out, he got a visa in Dubai. The White House was not informed. The Secretary of State was not informed. The Defense Department was not informed. State Department Arabis, who had resented Secretary Rice's appointment to begin with and were always in conflict with the White House and the Defense Department, wanted to shove another one up the noses of everybody who would dare stand up to these guys. And that left President Bush and Secretary Rice in almost a no-win position, because even had they revoked the visa, they would have opened and revealed the infighting and the incompetence in the State Department. But civil society didn't rest. And some extraordinary people that we'll be talking to in the next hour are going to take on Mohammad Khatami through legal process, through private prosecution, through private civil action. And it's as we've always said, you can't depend on government to do everything all the time, but you can damn well depend on citizens of courage, individuals, resolute, abiding by the truth, rallying a majority. And we're going to get to this story from three corners of the world right after this. Well, if you find Mohammad Khatami being in the United States as noxious as I do, you'll take heart from the effort of our first two guests. Hamid Sabi, international lawyer from London, who has taken the lead in pursuing private civil actions with some of Khatami's victims that we outlined in our introduction. Leo Adler is National Affairs Director for the Simon Wiesenthal Center And the Wiesenthal Center was the first organization to launch an organized drive urging America not to grant a visa. And as it happened, the visas were granted without a lot of the leadership even knowing about it. Now, Hamid, Leo, thank you for joining us. I want our listeners to know, some of whom are listening internationally, that Hamid, you are in Warsaw tonight, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And Leo, you are in Italy.
That's correct.
So we're gonna do this by which one gets to go to sleep first. No, so don't take this wrong, but let's start with Hamid. Hamid, you came up with this ingenious attack on Khatami based on the experiences of other lawyers who succeeded in cases against Iran. And could you just outline for us broadly what the initiative is composed of?
It is a two-pronged attack. The first one is if we can get a warrant of arrest in respect of the murder of Zahra Kazemi against Mr. Khatami, and that would be the main and foremost aim for this group, that we try to see whether the man can be arrested in the United States and then be returned to Canada for standing trial there for the crimes that he has committed. The second one is to ask the victims and the families of the victims of his reign to come forward and file civil suits against him. While he's in the United States, he can be correctly and properly be served in United States during the visit, and then he has to answer some very difficult questions. And hopefully we can attack him on both sides and hope for the best.
Now, I want our listeners to know that you and several of your associates have organized a legal team, and if those who have been victims or who have family members who have been victims of the Khatami regime will not have to expend money in order to be part of this lawsuit.
No, we have retained a firm of lawyers in New York with their associates in Israel, that they have a great experience in these cases. They have succeeded in suing the government of Iran for terrorist activities before, and they have obtained substantial judgments against Iran. This is a very successful and experienced group of lawyers. They have agreed to act pro bono in this case, and they are already representing some 12 families of the victims, and hopefully we can increase the numbers and we can serve Mr. Khatami while he's visiting the United States with the papers.
Now, one of the relatives of one of the victims will be joining us later on. Hamid, the precedent set by the Israeli lawyers, this, could you briefly outline that case that occurred?
That was the Flato case. There was a
this was a young lady who's
young lady
an American
having, American origin. She was visiting Israel, and her bus was blown up by terrorists. The evidence that was brought before the court proved without any shadow of doubt that Iran was behind the terrorist activity. The group, which was called Mohandas, gone to Iran, received $2 million loan or support from Iran. They have been reporting back to Iran on anything they did, and they were the ones that were behind the suicide bombing of the bus. And therefore, the court ordered Iran to pay some $25 million in compensatory damages and over $220 million in punitive damages.
Now, this court was in which country?
In the United States.
In the United States.
They sued.
So the decision can be executed in the United States by simple bailiff.
Yes. The decision has been made. Of course, Iran did not participate. They did not defend it. So it is a default judgment against Iran. But the judge that went over the file made a very detailed report of the incident and how Iran had participated in this or conspired in this act.
Leo Adler, Simon Wiesenthal Center, for some 10 days before the visa was granted to Khatami, had been making the world aware of this. All three of us were on a conference call with certain other people when we were told just last Wednesday, I believe, that by a State Department official, and I said this in our introduction, that there is no way that he's going to get a visa. We since found out from intelligence officials that this was not something that even the Secretary of State would have known about. How shocked was the international community when Friday morning Khatami appears in the United States and he's busy talking?
Well, I think it's extremely shocking, obviously. We're not talking about an ordinary tourist wanting to come from Iran to the United States. We're talking about a former head of state who has on his hands the blood of many, many people. I still don't know exactly how the circumstances were that he got his visa. I think the fact that it was through Dubai and the machinations, I suppose, that may have occurred there that resulted in this. And this is something that I think that the Americans are going to have to study very closely as to how it is that a president and a secretary of state are kept in the dark about this type of process.
Leo Adler, Hamid Sabi, we have to take a short break and we'll be right back with you. And we're talking tonight about the obnoxious imagery of a killer, former head of state, President Mohammed Khatami, lecturing in America, and civil society at its best roused to defend his victims and to object to his presence. And we're talking with international lawyer Hamid Sabi, who's usually in London, but tonight he's in Poland, and Leo Adler, National Affairs Director for the Simon Wiesenthal Center, who's in Italy instead of Toronto. Leo Adler, we were talking before the break how stunning it is, the series of events that all three of us have witnessed and others have witnessed over the past week, that it apparently this visa was issued in Dubai. The Secretary of State did not know. The President and the Secretary of State are put into a position of looking weak if they object, and so everybody's quiet. You were saying before the break how serious a breakdown in authority this is, but on the other hand, does it not underline how critical it is to have civil society leaders like Hamid Sabi and yourself to do the work that when government can't?
Well, it certainly does, and I'm grateful that at least on this one perspective, this one point, most of the civil society seems to be united. And I suppose if there's a silver lining in this, is to two things. One, by his presence and as a result, therefore, of some of the actions that will be taken, I think that the public will be more aware of what he's done in the past and what has gone on in Iran than perhaps before. And secondly, as was pointed out, now he'll be within the jurisdiction of the United States to hopefully at least get the commencement of civil proceedings against him, and in that way perhaps eventually get some justice for the victims. So we have to look at it from that perspective as well.
Several of the people who are going to be on with us tonight, like Homa Arjaman, the Iranian dissident who also led the fight against Sharia courts in Ontario, are down in Washington organizing what is supposed to be quite a sizable demonstration on Thursday. The Wiesenthal Center has had a lot of experience in common cause. Are any of the American organizations involved with the Iranians who are organizing this demonstration?
Well, the Simon Wiesenthal Center has a very good and close relationship with the Iranian community in Los Angeles, which is one of the largest outside of Iran. And there have been demonstrations in the past and protests to Iranian policies, and the Simon Wiesenthal Center will be extremely actively involved with that. And we're hoping to be able to participate in Washington as well. I think, again, that the fact that these protests will take place will hopefully bring home to the public what has taken place in Iran in the past, and in fact is continuing in the present, and that Iranian policies are not only destructive to individuals and individual people as set out in the lawsuits, but also as matters of national policy.
Hamid Sabi, It's been said that when one does something and doesn't write about it, it's as if it is half undone. And if one doesn't do something and writes about it, it's as if it is half done. Have you organized the press for Thursday or for any attempt to serve ex-President Khatami in Washington?
Attempts are being made to serve him wherever we can. And, of course, you know that he is surrounded by lots of security agents who would not allow any process server to get close. But hopefully our efforts will succeed and he will be served eventually in this trip. And he would then realize that he has to answer this question.
Would not the very attempt to serve him with media there be a very eloquent statement?
It is. Of course, the whole gathering of the people, as Leo just mentioned, this is the silver lining in the whole picture, that we have all come here, we are united in our purpose, and we are sending a message. It's not only to Khatami, it's sending to whoever that is involved in this sort of action, whether it's in Iran or anywhere else. The world would not accept, or the civil society would not accept this sort of conduct. We will not stand quiet when people allow themselves to go and torture another human being, beat her or him to death, take his fingernails out, and do all these terrifying things to one person.
Never again is not merely a legacy of the Jewish Holocaust. Never again is a reality for life for all people in the world today. Hamid Sabi, Leo Adler, thank you very much for leading civil society where it's supposed to go. And we're going to keep on this story this week and next, and for the weeks to come. Thank you very much. Montreal will be right back.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
And after the show, you can email your comments to info@iapm.ca. And tonight we're talking about the extraordinary vision of a murderous ex-president of Iran named Mohammad Khatami, the incredible story of how he slipped through layers of bureaucracy, got a visa into the States, and now is lecturing the West on what it should be doing. But we've also met with remarkably courageous leaders of civil society who are shadowing his every move, who are pursuing him, both criminally and civilly, who are bringing to the attention of the media his crimes against humanity. And we're going to be meeting in a few moments the sister of one of the people murdered by this regime. Just before we get to that, we've got Carol from NDG. Good evening, Carol.
Hi, Mr. Weissman. Beryl.
Beryl's fine.
I want to just point out it may not be the topic because I caught you only a few minutes ago. I was out and I want to apologize for that. About what happened at the Jewish school.
Yes.
I'm very troubled by the reaction of the police. It's like they don't want to see that it could be anti-Semitism, which is, I'm pretty sure it is.
Well, I think
it's like they're closing their eyes on that. It's very troubling.
It's troubling a lot of people, but I think to give some credit or some benefit of the doubt to the police department, there are two reasons I think they were so quick off the mark to say that there's nothing yet to suggest it's a hate crime besides the fact there was no letter. Number one, I think they'd like to keep the temperature down. And number two, by treating it as an arson, as a case of arson, they have the ability to put tremendous assets, police assets, on the case as opposed to just giving it to the hate crimes unit. But clearly, Carol, it is troubling that the atmosphere in Quebec the past month has been troubling. The language used by media when they talk about les Juifs instead of les Israéliens, the pro-Hezbollah rally attended by politicians with prayer shawls defiled. I don't think when you raise a temperature of a society to those degrees of incitement that anybody should be surprised that something like this happens. And, of course, I wouldn't be surprised if it did turn out to be a hate crime. But we thank you for your thoughts, Carol, very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I'm going to read you a poem. It's called In the Pitch of the Night. It is some time now that in this solitude, silence is the color on the lips. A cry far away calls me, but my feet are bound in the dark of the night. There's no hope in the darkness. All doors and walls are closed in. If a shadow slithers on the ground, it is only an illusion in sight. People's breathing is depressed. Some time now that is in despair, all joy gone. The spell of the night closes on me and my sorrow. I try hard to fight it, but it laughs at me. Whatever effort I made in the day went up in the smoke when night came along. The drawings I made at night are nowhere to be found. It's been a while now that I, like others, see only silence on the lips. There is no movement in this darkness. My hands and feet are bound in the pitch of the night. That poem is from an extraordinary prison diary of Akbar Mohammadi. Akbar Mohammadi was a student dissident leader in Iran, arrested first in 1999 under Mohammad Khatami's regime, prosecuted by Sayyid Murtazavi, the same man that the Canadian government has called for his arrest for the murder of Zahra Khazemi, the same Murtazavi who was promoted to be Procurator General of Iran. Akbar Mohammadi was released in 2005, rearrested in 2006, and died in a Tehran prison last month. And we're privileged to be joined by his courageous sister, Nazreen Mohammadi, who was in Washington protesting the visit of Mohammad Khatami, and who will be joining in the legal suits that we heard about earlier from Hamid Sabi. Nasri Mohammadi, welcome. Thank you for your courage.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for giving me the time.
Nasreen, your brother went through, you found out that your brother went through horrible, excruciating treatment in his last months in prison. Could you share some of what you know with us?
Sure.
Take your time.
My brother was arrested 6 years ago during the raid of the dormitories. The regime's forces attacked the students in the middle of the night during sleep and killed three of them. One student was thrown from third floor windows. There was huge demonstration by the student by the after. Both my brother were the student leader of that demonstration and were arrested. They were sentenced to death along with two other students. But the regime later commuted the death sentence and gave them 15 years in jail because of international pressure. They were allowed to leave the prison and go to hospital for medical treatment in the sick leave. When Akbar had a sick leave, Akbar wrote a book and sent for me in outside.
Nazreen, hold that thought about the book, and we'll get to it in just 1 second. We have to take a short break.
Okay.
Thank you for your patience. And we are taking the whole program today to lay out the case against former Iranian President Mohammad Khatami, who by stealth obtained an American visa, is busy lecturing in the United States. But there are leaders of civil society that are after him legally. And right now we're talking to the sister of one of his victims, Nazreen Mohammadi.
Yes.
Her brother was a student dissident leader who was tortured and killed a month ago in Tehran after many years in prison. And Nazreen, you were just telling us about him and his friends and what happened when they were released to hospital at one point in their sentence.
When you asked me about when he had a hunger strike and
resigned. Yes.
Or before when they arrest him after his book published.
No, you were talking just before the break about how he got the book out. How he got the book to you and then the hunger strike.
Yeah. He sent an email for me, and by email, I, with help from a good friend, was able to publish it in California. We published his book to Farsi. Akbar was on leave when the book was published. They immediately regime took him back to prison. My brother, Akbar Mohammadi, a student, a social worker, spent 7 years of his life as a political prisoner in the Islamic regime of occupied Iran. He was under a great deal of torture and pain since the date of his capture in 1997. His imprisonment was due to his viewpoints toward the basic human right to freedom and democracy, freedom of speech, freedom to write, the secularism, the basic human rights of women, and discussing his thought with other students at the university, and planning to establish an organization for political activities. During his
prosecutor was also Saeed Murtazavi?
Yes, he was.
Appointed by President Khatami?
President Khatami. At that time they arrested him. The first time they arrested him, President Khatami and
Murtazavi was the prosecutor general now when he died in prison.
Yes,
and you told me among the tortures that he suffered, they glued his mouth together.
Yeah, sure. I want to explain to people how the regime killed him, how the terrorist regime killed him, the Murtazavi and Khatami and all the government. They are killers. They are terrorists. Akbar, when the regime arrested him during his captivity, he was repeatedly interrogated and tortured by the authorities. They tortured always. Started with beating and kicking, slapping to his face every day, 70 hours, torturing him and slapping and kicking his face and body by group while he was blind, voided, weeping by electronic cable, and while he was sitting sitting to the point of he would faint or lose conscience, Gopani hand cuffed, which is tightening two hands together and from up and one from down on his back, then hanging him in the air. The adverse effect of those torture on his health are broken bones, weakness, his eyesight, lose 50% of his hearing in his left ear, broken teeth and jaw bones, deep phase of depression and torture him, the regime, brutal regime, torture him a lot.
And this is the President Khatami who has the audacity to lecture the West. And I think the lessons from all this is that when we hear the Khatamis and we hear the Ahmadinejads, we should take them at their word as to what they threaten to the West, because they've already done it to their own people. Nazreen, you are in Washington, and you are helping organize a demonstration against Khatami on Thursday.
Yeah.
Many people are coming from many cities. I know that people who are supposed to be on this program tonight are traveling from Toronto. Do you expect it to be a significant demonstration on Thursday at the National Cathedral?
Yeah. I want the people hearing Iranian people coming there, and we have a big demonstration. The President Khatami. We want to tell to all of our President Khatami is a big terrorist. He tortured the student when he was president. We should complain about him, from him, come blood him. He's big killer. He's big terrorist. Please, please, give me time for... I want a little explain. I want to tell everybody when the was the president, what he did about the student, when my brother's Akbar Manoucher regime tortured him, he was president. He supported terrorists, he supported the people attack students, innocent students. Support them, President Khatami. He had a speech, several speeches I heard many times. He told about the students, they are guilty people. They are young, guilty students. But he supports bad people. He supports the people attack the innocent students. Akbar, in his book suggests, Mr. Khatami, how he told about the student when the regime tortured him when he was president. He wrote a book while in the prison and explained the way they prison, and also mentioned the murder, Zahra Kazemi, the Canadian journalist who was murdered by prison called Saeed Mortazabi, and Khatami was that time president.
Nazreen Mohammadi, I thank you for your eloquence and I thank you for your courage. And I want to share one line from your brother's poetry from his prison diary, Ideas and Lashes, the prison diary of Akbar Mohammadi. The dark nights are over, my friend, he wrote. We will see the dawn when the sun shall rise on the edge of freedom. And as long as all of us stand with the Nazreen Mohammadis and for the memory of the Akbar Mohammadis, then the sun shall truly rise on the edge of freedom. Nazreen Mohammadi, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. You gave me time. Thank you.
We'll be back. Well, we've devoted this program to the case against Mohammed Khatami. We've heard from the polemicists. We've heard from the activists. We've heard from the lawyers, and most poignantly, we just heard of memory and witness. And I can't think of a better way to conclude this examination. And what will hopefully stay in all your minds is an indictment of what most of the world is facing in a world of tyrants, than to speak with our next guest, Maurice Copperthorne. Maurice Copperthorne is a professor of law at University of British Columbia. But very importantly on this subject, he was the last United Nations rapporteur on Iran. He was the rapporteur to the United Nations Human Rights Commission, and after his mandate ended in 2002, no other was appointed. Mr. Copperthorne is in Vancouver, and we thank you for joining us tonight.
Good evening, bro.
Maurice, I'm sorry you ran a little long with Nazreen Mohammadi, but as you could have heard, she was quite emotional.
And it was quite important, I think.
Why was the United Nations Human Rights Commission, why did it not feel that it was necessary to have a rapporteur after your mandate ended?
Why did it feel that it wasn't necessary?
It was not necessary.
Yeah. There has been a general trend over the past 10 years to limit and, where possible, get rid of individual country rapporteurs. There's a block of developing countries emerging which says, we don't need criticism, we need help. We need technical assistance on how to run human rights regimes and so on. So that the number of country special rapporteurs has been declining for some time. And in the 7 years that I had this mandate, I don't think I ever had an absolute majority. It was always a plurality, and in the few years before it was finally defeated, it was a plurality of a couple of votes.
Were you... heightened? Was your confidence heightened, at least in the Canadian engagement with the United Nations, when you heard that our government asked for the arrest of Saeed Mortazawi when he was sent as an observer to the United Nations Human Rights Council, the new Human Rights Council that replaced the old commission? Is this a, are you emboldened by it?
Well, I think that the situation in Iran has reached the point where international interest, international action, international involvement is necessary. And I think if you speak to the many of the activists, including some that I wouldn't want to mention publicly, they say that after a certain point, when it's clear the regime, a regime, is not moving towards meeting the expectations of people, then that is the time for the international community to become involved. They are saying simply, let us try first. If we can't make it, then we're going to ask for outside help.
You talked about the expectations of people. Your knowledge of Iran is intimate. There was a lot of surprise after the last Iranian elections. It was generally, the conventional wisdom was generally perceived to be that the women had turned against the mullahs, the students had turned against the mullahs, and here we have Ahmadinejad elected. Was this a period of great dejection?
No, I detected or received a little different take on it. First of all, they felt as a large proportion of the electorate felt as many people outside the country do, was Khatami was either unwilling or unable to effect substantial change, particularly in the daily life of people. And therefore, the number of voters declined significantly in the last election. There was some surprise at this particular president being elected because he's outside the political elite. And there was a suggestion from a number of sources that one of the reasons he was so unexpected and so successful was that the voting public was fed up with the political elite playing games, and they wanted someone who came from a modest background, as he does, and who would share the difficulties in terms of inflation and jobs and all sorts of expectations that are not being met, and that he rode to a certain extent this expectation that he would be a real reformer in the things that matter to people. And that's not including foreign policy, it's including, you know, jobs and what goes on in daily life.
Maurice Kapathorn, we're running late due to the stark testimony of Nasreen Mohammadi. If we might, we'd like to call you back tomorrow night and continue this discussion on whether on how international justice, if it can deal with Mohammad Khatami.
Sure.
We thank you for being with us. Thanks to Nick Mays. Montreal, we hope tonight in the case against Mohammad Khatami has taught you one thing. All that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. We'll be back tomorrow.